Rizzo. Welcome, everyone, to the Conscious Business Telesummit. This is Adela Rubio, your host, with my guest today, Lama Tantrapa, and his name is much, much longer, but we're going to keep it familiar and friendly here. So our topic today is how to become the top expert in your field by becoming a media personality, and we will dive into our conversation shortly. But let's just take a moment, to just connect and link up and sync up our energy. Take a nice deep breath, and if you've been seated all day, it's really wonderful just to stand feet hip-width apart, take a nice deep breath, and feel your energy just coming up through the floor, reaching out, as if it's radiating out from all of you. As if you are the center of everything, soften the knees, relax the arms, just feel the shoulders just kind of in an posture. And just feel your body fully online, as if all the lights are on at home, inside, all of you aliving, coming into this moment vibrantly. And just feel our vibrant connection, our super connection to one another, to the field of all that is. Life just burgeoning, bubbling, and so excited to move through each one of us into this possibility of a conscious business that aligns with your essence, expresses your purpose, and engages your fullness. Thank you, everyone. And remember to have a pad and a pen just to jot down any insights, any ahas. There will be moments on this call where you will be called to take action. You will be called to step into a possibility, into an idea that is just right for you. So you want to capture that so you can do what you need to do as soon as we get off this call. And we've got a wonderful offer from Lama Tantrapa that we'll be talking about. There is a wonderful opportunity for 10 folks to have a one-on-one coaching session with him. And we'll tell you how to get the details for that at the end of the call. So let me all welcome you to the call, and especially my guest, Lama Tantrapa. He's the founder of the Academy of Chi Dao, and is the holder of the lineage of Chi Dao that has been fostered in his clan for 27 generations since 1224 AD. Lama Tantrapa has over 30 years of experience in Chi Dao and other internal martial arts. For years, he operated Portland Qigong Clinic, one of just a handful of Qigong clinics in the U.S. He's an author, an avid speaker and presenter, and his radio talk show, The Secrets of Qigong Masters, is the first and only program in America dedicated to a friendly and mindful exchange of ideas and secrets of the trade. As the host of this enlightening talk show, he interviews prominent experts in the fields of Oriental medicine, energy healing, meditation, and internal martial arts. Welcome, Lama.
Thank you, Adela. It is such a pleasure to be on this call.
Yeah, it is certainly my pleasure to host you at the Conscious Business Telesummit. And, you know, you have such an interesting background, Lama. I didn't even read everything from your bio because it was just, it's just so much.
It just goes on and on.
I mean, but that the richness of your background, I'm wondering if you can just share a bit with us about how this diverse experience and richness of who you are and the work that you've done, how has that informed and brought you to become this media personality which you've become?
Definitely. Well, one of the things that you started the teleseminar tonight, is very similar to Qigong. As a matter of fact, many Qigong practitioners would say, oh, this is exactly how I start my classes. Developing the natural stance, awareness of breathing, allowing the energy to flow freely through the entire organism, and receiving the empowerment from the universe is what Qigong is about. Now, it is not as much of a household name as yoga has become recently. But 30 years ago, very few people practiced yoga, and not many people knew about it. Nowadays, Qigong has actually become the most used or the most practiced wellness discipline in the world, actually far surpassing yoga. Mind you that most of the Qigong practitioners are in China, where there is over 100 million people practicing it. And I do not come from China. I actually come from Russia. Russia is obviously a huge country, and the major part of it lies in Asia, bordering China and other Asian countries. And when Genghis Khan, the ancient Mongol ruler, created his empire, which covered most of Eurasia, he brought into the countries that he conquered his native practices. And the Mongol culture is very similar to Tibetan culture. So one of the things that he actually introduced, or not perhaps him personally, but many other members of his Mongol army, introduced to the countries that comprised the Mongol Empire, was the practice of energy awareness. At that time, it was not called Qigong. There are many names that it's been used to call this practice. For example, in Tibetan, it's called Truhor, but it doesn't sound very decent to the English-speaking folks, so I don't use this name. I use Qidao, which is more of a Chinese version of the name. But the idea is very similar to what you used at the beginning of our call, becoming aware of the energy, feeling its flow, and actually allowing this flow to empower us, to guide us, to give us the sense of being in the flow. Now, I'm sure that many of the listeners on the call today have experienced at least once in their lives the sense of being in the flow. Well, there are many people who experience it more than once in their lifetimes. For example, athletes, when they perform in the zone, there is such a term, peak performance. Well, that is what happens when you are in the flow. When you are in the flow, you also experience the most profound sense of wellness and well-being. You also feel very empowered, so you can accomplish much more, be that the creative activity or communication or leadership or community building and many other things. I actually happen to be a lineage holder of the practice that's been fostered in my family for a number of generations. Simply put, some of the Russian folks decided to actually cooperate with the Mongols, and they learned their traditions. So even though it was not a popular thing to do in Russia, especially during the communist regime, but it actually was something that members of my family and my clan practiced for centuries. And an interesting thing about this practice is that unlike what most people think about Qigong, we don't practice forms. And we actually instead learn how to feel the flow and how to surrender to the flow. Now, there is a big difference between focusing your attention on the form versus the inner essence of the experience. So today, I would like to attract the attention of our listeners to the inner essence of a very different but still very interesting aspect of being an entrepreneur, a writer, an author, or a professional, or an enthusiast in any discipline related to health, wellness, well-being, spirituality, personal development, and so on. And that is the aspect of business that catapulted some of the most prominent people in this field. For example, Deepak Chopra. Very few people knew about him until he appeared on Oprah. Of course, recently, or not so long ago, another prominent author appeared on Oprah, few people knew about him, or not very many people, and then suddenly he became like a household name. I'm talking about Eckhart Tolle. And very many other authors and producers and creative folks became prominent, became experts or thought leaders in their respective fields because they appeared in the media. Now, I'm sure that those of you who have tried getting publicity know how difficult it can be. I'm sure that it took Eckhart Tolle years to actually be invited to Oprah shows. The same also applies to many other folks who appeared on less prominent media outlets. Of course, if you appear on Oprah show, millions upon millions of people will know about you. But it's virtually impossible to get on that show just because you want to. You actually have much better chance to appear on some local shows or less prominent international shows, or perhaps on internet-based shows. For example, everyone is probably aware of this term, internet radio. It is basically the type of broadcasting that does not use airwaves. Instead, it is available on the internet. So you can listen to it on the computer, you can download it on your iPod or iPhone or other MP3 player and listen to it at your leisure. So it doesn't have to be at the time when the show is airing. You can listen to it actually whenever it's convenient for you. It's also something that can be automatically downloaded in your computer as a podcast. Now, this is just an example of the new media. I would consider this new media because it came into existence just in the last decade. There is also internet TV. There are all kinds of blogs and video podcasts and e-zines and many other types of new media that we can also speak about. But today, I would like to focus on the internet radio, something that I understand pretty well because I happen to have my own radio talk show called The Secrets of Qigong Masters. That's right, there are folks that are called Qigong Masters. Those are the people who actually are particularly skillful and experienced in the energy art, something that we were just talking about. So, just like yoga gurus, in Qigong there are prominent leaders or experts who become thought leaders, who become authorities, to whom people come to if they want to learn Qigong. I mean, you can also learn Qigong from an acupuncturist if he took enough Qigong classes at the acupuncture school. You may even take Qigong at YMCA nowadays. But to really get a substantial immersion experience in this energy art, it would definitely be helpful to study with a bona fide master. Now, how does a person become such a master? Well, there are no organized systems or associations or boards of examiners who produce certifications. Of course, there are certifications that are produced by various organizations, but they are not systematized. There is no agreement between many schools. So what people do is basically they become masters in their own right. They become masters when they are skilled enough that other people consider them masters. So you don't usually get a diploma that says you're a Qigong master. Just like you don't need to get a diploma, for example, if you are a meditation expert. Just like you don't need to have a diploma if you are a self-improvement expert. And many other fields that don't require the diploma or schooling, the type of academic schooling that most people would receive at the university. It's more of the personal apprenticeship to an expert like a master, or just a substantial amount of study, a lifelong study that you may engage in and eventually feel that I'm actually an expert in this field. And if others also respect you as a master or as an expert, then you have authority. Now, do you think that's easier to offer your books, or if you offer any seminars or any coaching programs or any other products that you would like to offer to people? Is it easier for you to offer them if people know about you and recognize you as an authority figure, or is it easier for you if nobody knows who you are?
Well, absolutely, if you're an authority. And I love how you're already answering all my questions, Lama. We're like connected here.
This is kind of a rhetorical question, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's definitely easier.
Yeah.
To offer whatever you're offering if you are known as an expert, if you're known as an authority or a thought leader in your field. Now, how do you become a thought leader in your field? Well, there are different ways to do that. Obviously, writing either articles or, better yet, books is one of the ways to establish yourself as an authority figure. There are ways to establish yourself by engaging in some professional associations and perhaps eventually be on the board of the directors of the association. You know, I spent years being on the board of directors of the National Qigong Association and eventually was elected the vice president, although for a very short amount of time. And then I left the association right before right about the time when I launched my radio talk show. The funny thing is that it is crucial to recognize what works for you, because what works for one person may not always work for other people. And what works for you today may not be the same as what worked yesterday. And tomorrow, it may be again different.
Lama, can I ask you just to clarify that a little bit? When you say what doesn't work for one person might not work for another, what are you speaking to specifically?
Well, for example, if you are a very outspoken, enthusiastic, perhaps a people's person, it will be easier for you to become an expert, for example, by doing public speaking. Perhaps you can give keynote speeches at the association that is involved in your field of activities. Perhaps you may start giving seminars. But if you're a more introverted person, you may feel not very comfortable speaking in front of the public. As a matter of fact, I've heard the statistics that this is the greatest fear that many people have, to speak in public. So for some people, it may actually be not the best choice. For some people, it's easier to write. Well, for others, it may be very difficult to write. For me personally, it was quite difficult to write, even though you can hear me speak English relatively fluently. This is my third language. So I had to figure out how to communicate in English. And writing in English was certainly a challenge for some time. I mean, now I have several books to my name, but it took me years to really figure out how to communicate my knowledge in the foreign language. Now, not everybody who is listening to this teleseminar will be a native English speaker, I suspect. But what is possible for the person who is not as fluent in writing may still be possible in spoken word. For example, being able to talk on the phone is easier than being able to write articles or books. Is that right or wrong?
Well, I think it depends. And This is one of my questions that I have around this. Are there certain characteristics or personality traits that you think make it really easy for you to host a radio show?
Well, I think some degree of people skills is very helpful. In other words, the person who is very introverted will probably have more difficult time becoming a media personality. Because what I'm talking about is not just appearing on somebody else's show. What I'm talking about is turning the tables. It's actually becoming a media personality yourself, becoming the representative of the new media, so you don't have to chase after the media so that they would interview you. You actually become the media. You create your own media outlet, and you start offering either interviews or other types of programs that people will be either listening to or watching or reading, depending on the type of media you create. Different mediums offer different opportunities. As I mentioned today, I would like to focus mostly on the internet radio. And it's not my only media outlet. I also am creating an internet TV program, and e-zine, and other media outlets are creating a hub of various types of media, including blogs, including podcasts, you name it. But what I'm talking about right now is something very simple. It's almost like giving a teleseminar. The only difference is that you are not doing it just for the folks who register for the teleseminar. You're doing it for everybody who wants to listen. In other words, the person doesn't have to give you their email address and the name by registering for the teleseminar. When they want to listen to the radio talk show, they can do it free of charge without any registration in most cases. There are some radio talk shows and other media outlets that do require registration, and we can talk about it a little bit later. What is required is, first of all, the understanding that in order to create publicity, one needs to start creating something. In other words, publicity doesn't come out of nothing, just like fame and fortune don't fall on your lap on their own accord. Now, being a Tibetan Lama, I'm not chasing after fame or fortune, but I'm trying to use this as a metaphor. And what I'm doing with our presentation today is simply trying to spark curiosity, because it's impossible to teach people in 1 hour how to become a host of a radio talk show. It's a pretty impressive amount of information and knowledge that is required, but it is very doable. And it's also extremely fun, because you are meeting the best, the most interesting, the most fascinating people in the area that you are most interested in. In other words, you are interviewing the people who you want to interview on your show. That means you're having fun doing that, and you're also offering a tremendous value to thousands upon thousands of people worldwide.
Yeah, well, I have several questions. I know that we can't cover everything today, but can you cover some of the basic things that people would have to consider if they're planning to have a radio show themselves? What are some of the starting steps or the things that they would need to have in hand to start looking into having a radio show?
Well, first of all, understanding your niche is crucial. In other words, what is it that you want to have a radio show about? Is this going to be a show about dog training? Is it going to be about personal development? Is it going to be about meditation, about success, about self-healing, about development of creative projects, time management, whatever. It can be a talk show about your favorite subject, but it's crucial to know what that subject is. So solidifying the topic, I would say, is the most crucial point. For some people, they have no problem with that because they're already experts or already somewhat established in one particular area and want to continue going in that direction. For some folks, they're just looking around or trying to break into a niche. Others are studying a specific subject at school or apprenticing to someone, and they want to establish themselves once they graduate from their program. What is crucial is to identify what it is that people want to hear about. If you're studying macrame, and there are only 150 people in the United States who are interested in this type of craft, I'm sure there are many more than that. I'm just using that as an example. Well, you will have really hard time launching a radio talk show that will have any substantial success. There are many radio talk shows that have just a dozen people listening to them ever. And hosts of those shows just do this for the love of the art. They just enjoy interviewing folks that are on the same page with them, so to speak. And
well,
they're having fun, and they do that no matter how many listeners they attract.
Yeah, I understand. But what if you wanted to find out if it was a good topic? Is there any way to test it? Is there any way if you can find out whether it's a good topic to host a show on?
Absolutely. Well, first of all, looking into the search engines, doing some keyword search to find out how popular certain topics are.
Mm-hmm.
If nobody is searching for your keyword, well, perhaps it's important to expand the search. On the other hand, if your keyword is just too broad of a subject, for example, you know, 100 million people are searching for the word oil. What kind of oil talk show would you offer? Everybody will be calling you for various different types of oil. You know, crude oil or cooking oil or car engine oil or all different kinds of oil. So that would probably be too broad of a topic. So you would need to specifically pinpoint what exactly you want to focus on. Then from there you can expand. Another interesting way besides search engine and keyword research would be to go to Amazon.com. and see if there are books on that subject matter. And if there are at least 1,000 books on the subject matter, well, that would be an excellent topic. If there are 10,000 books, great. If there is 1.5 million, that may be too many. In other words, it's, again, too broad of a topic, so you can narrow the field a little bit more specifically. In order to narrow the field, you can simply do the search for more keywords combined together. So, for example, if you're using the same example of oil, maybe it's not the best example, but if you are offering a talk show about cooking oil, maybe you can actually specifically talk about a vegetable oil, or maybe you can talk about canola oil. So that creates more narrow topic. If, for instance, you practice meditation, well, it may be transcendental meditation, or it may be the mindfulness meditation, or maybe different other types of meditation. If you actually focus on a particular type of meditation or meditation for particular purposes, for example, meditation for, I don't know, weight loss. Wow, sounds like a great topic, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm sure that people would be interested in learning how they can meditate away their pounds. And that might be an excellent radio talk show topic, except there may be already 25 different radio talk shows on the Internet about that. If there is too much competition, of course, it means two things. that there is enough interest on one hand, but that may also mean there are too many competitors to deal with. So, of course, it would make sense to narrow the niche or make it add a special twist. For example, not just meditation for weight loss, but meditation for weight loss, for example, for a middle-aged man. Well, that would be a different, perhaps, twist from everybody else's.
Mm-hmm.
You may not get a lot of people who do not fall into that category, but middle-aged men, for example, are more likely to listen to that than to any other generic meditation program. So, in other words, there may be a need for a specific topic to choose in order to become a successful radio talk show. And the second one, go ahead, do you have a question?
No, go ahead, finish that thought.
Another thing, of course, is to test. For example, if you have a blog, and if you don't have a blog, you must have a blog to start with. I would say that if you want to become a media personality or have a media outlet of your own, having a blog would be the obvious first step. Just go to WordPress or go to blogger.com or many other blogging sites. Create a blog and see if you can offer the blog dedicated to this topic and ask the people who read your blog to give you comments about the specific subject matter of a radio talk show that you have in mind. If you have a list of email recipients, either you send a newsletter or you have an e-zine, or you just have a bunch of friends. If you have more than 100 friends in your mailing list, well, that already may give you some reasonable amount of statistical data for your research. If you ask them, what do you think about my idea of launching a radio talk show on such and such subject matter? Please just give me yay or nay. Or if you have some creative ideas, feel free to provide me with some alternatives. And that may be one of the best ways to recruit people to listen to your show to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they gave you the approval that, yes, we like this topic, well, just by default, it means that they would be interested in listening to it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Unless they lie to you. So that means that you already may have a few dedicated listeners. And then from that relatively small number of dedicated listeners, that may grow through the word of mouth, through what they call Web 2.0, in other words, the people who like your show may start tweeting about it. By the way, if you don't have a Twitter account, that may be just as crucial to have as a blog. Personally, I don't tweet a lot. I don't tell people what I eat for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. But I do announce each and every interview that I do on my show, which goes on a regular basis once a week on Monday night at 6 p.m. Pacific time or 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I send out a newsletter to thousands of people who are interested in receiving the news. What is the next interview about? There is also a blog that I have, and I also tweet about the upcoming events. So many of the internet radio stations actually provide you with very, very much automated ways of announcing your upcoming events and shows. We'll look into that in just a minute.
Yeah, Lama, you have a really impressive number of listeners on your show. And I was wondering if you've shared some of the things, some of the ways that folks can generate some traffic for their show. But I wondered, how did you get that number of listeners?
Well, I think one of the main things is that I created a show that sparked curiosity of a lot of people. For a couple of years, I had been thinking about creating some kind of media outlet. I was thinking, well, should I create an e-zine or maybe just an email newsletter? Well, I had an email newsletter for years. So the subscribers to the email newsletter probably became some of the most dedicated listeners of my show. But then I also started a blog and then started another blog. So I ended up actually having 7 blogs. I can't say that I'm maintaining all 7 of them. I also am a published author of several books. So perhaps some of the listeners are the readers of my books. And of course, I also produced video film available on DVD, and people buy it on Amazon and many other internet stores and physical locations. So that's something that perhaps brings people in as well. In other words, I did not become a media personality first, but this can be very effective for those folks who want to actually first establish themselves as an expert and then perhaps start writing books or perhaps do other things that would allow them to share their knowledge with other people. So it can go both ways.
Well, I think that some of what I'm hearing is that you have multiple media outlets. You're putting your message out there in quite a number of ways. And
if you want to receive a letter, you need to send a letter.
Right.
If you want to communicate with other people, well, you need to start communicating first.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say that it happens by default. You just build it and they will come. No, that doesn't work that way. You have to build it, and then you actually need to work on it to make people aware of the fact that there is a radio talk show. But it is crucial to start building it, understanding what it is that you're doing and where you're going with it. So if you don't mind, I would like to start looking at some of the ways to create a show. And it
mm-hmm.
doesn't even have to be a show. It can be just a podcast. It can be a series of teleseminars to start with. It's something that can be actually done on the phone, as long as you have a phone with decent connection or cell phone with decent reception. You can and should consider doing a radio talk show. Now, if you are living in the area where there is no great internet service, for example, you don't have broadband or DSL, that is not a problem. Because as long as you have a phone line, you can do that. Some people say, but what about the quality of recording? The quality of a phone line usually is not as crisp as a professional audio recording in a studio. That is absolutely correct. But you are not creating a broadcast quality radio show. You are creating a more of an amateur quality radio show first. And then you can build upon that. You can start with just a regular phone, and then you can invest in the mic, for example. A more or less decent mic may cost you a couple of $100, but you don't have to show it out first. You can just record it on the phone. Just like you don't have to pay to create your own show. As a matter of fact, there are many radio stations, both broadcasting and internet stations, that say, oh, you want a show. You can have it for $2,000 upfront payment and $150 a month. I say baloney. There are plenty of areas where you can, plenty of internet services that don't charge you anything at all. It is completely free. It started, I think, or one of the original ones was Skype. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but there was such thing as Skypecast.
Mm-hmm.
Thousands of people started creating their own Skypecasts. Eventually, it became so overwhelming that Skype closed it down. So few folks even remember about those nowadays. But that was kind of like a beginning of the wave that some people caught and started surfing that wave and then gained the momentum. So even though when Skype shut that service down, they just moved on to another service. For example, I really enjoy the service called TalkShoe. The name is kind of goofy. It's like Talk, T-A-L-K, and Shoe, S-H-O-E. So you can find it online, TalkShoe.com. It's very much like a Skype, voice over an internet service. And they also provide you an opportunity to create your own podcast or a live show. Now, I use this for my teleseminars, but it allows you only so many people to connect to you at the same time. I think the limit is 200 people. So I use it only for the private teleseminars. For public teleseminars like the one that we are listening to right now, I use another service called freephoneconference.com. But it's not always free, of course. If you want to have upgraded service, you pay some money, not very much. And what these services offer is an opportunity to broadcast your message. You can have a conference call with another person who's also on the phone. It may be next door. It may be on the opposite end of the continent. I've interviewed people from all over the world, including, for example, Montak Chia, who I interviewed on Monday. I gave another interview last year from Thailand. So, and I also interviewed folks from China and from Europe and Mexico and other countries in the North American continent, and it was great. It can be done exceptionally easy using the technology everyone has, the phone. If you have a computer and the phone, that's basically all the technology that you need to start with. Now, if we're talking about what services I use, there is a wonderful free-of-charge system called Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com. When you have solidified the topic of your show, then you can simply go to blogtalkradio.com and click on the link that says that you want to be a host. Once again, it costs nothing, absolutely nothing, to register yourself as a host and to create your own radio talk show. As long as you know what you're doing, you're not going to be wasting your time. You are going to be basically creating the media outlet that will be maybe just a weekly show, maybe even a biweekly show. Sometimes it's better to have more frequent shows, so if you have the steam to go several times a week, that's great. I've known people who do shows every day. They find ways to also monetize the shows. In other words, not only do they become experts in their field, they also find ways to either repurpose their recordings of their interviews that they take on their shows, or they offer other services that people listening to the shows are interested in. For example, for a number of months, I was looking for sponsors. And then suddenly it dawned on me that I don't need to look for sponsors. My own school of Qigong can be sponsored. And that created an excellent publicity opportunity for my Qigong school. And also it happened to be an excellent way to promote what I already offer to the group of people who are eager to listen to the other Qigong masters. Since the topic of the show that I do is the secrets of Qigong masters, I interview a new Qigong master every week, and it can be either a live interview or it can be a recorded interview. So sometimes the person, for example, living in Asia or Australia or Europe may not be available at a time when I air the show. So we connect by phone. We record the interview. I usually use a TalkShoe for recording because it actually creates automatically an MP3 file, which you can download on your computer in no time. And with that service, you can also put that MP3 file, upload it into the Blog Talk Radio, and then just click on play the recording when it's time to broadcast. So in other words, sometimes it is a better idea to actually record the interview ahead of time, but it doesn't give the listeners an opportunity to call in with questions. Like tonight, for example, I hope that we will have a few minutes for listeners to call in with their questions, right?
We've actually got a couple of questions already.
Fantastic.
Yeah, we do. I know you've got stuff that you want to cover and you want to make sure, but I know that one of the big questions that I hear over and over again, and one of the questions that was my question in the beginning was, how do you get prominent experts in the field to be your guest?
Oh, the best way to find out who the prominent experts are is, of course, to go to Amazon.com and look up who wrote books on the subject. And most of the books have this nowadays either a website address or some way to contact the author. If there isn't such thing in the book, then, of course, you can simply Google the author's name. And in most cases, the authors happen to have websites. And most websites have a contact us page or an email address prominently displayed. So you can contact the author and simply invite them to be a guest on your radio talk show. It takes a little bit of guts and perseverance to jump into doing that. But once you have invited several interesting people on the show, it becomes almost automatic. You don't think twice about inviting another celebrity on your show. And then there is, of course, a number of professional organizations and associations. Being on the board of directors of the National Qigong Associations for many years, I just happen to know personally a number of Qigong experts in the United States and abroad. So many of them became among the first guests I invited on the show. And another thing that is crucial is, of course, to have some networking opportunities, whether on the internet or live. If, for example, you are a member of a community of people practicing a specific art or a specific healing discipline, well, most likely these practitioners meet from time to time for conferences, congresses, various types of events, even seminars. Who are the people leading the seminars? Who are the keynote speakers at the conferences? Who are the organizers of these events? Those are great people to invite because they will have a lot to share and people want to listen to what they have to say. Does it make sense?
Yeah. Those are great tips. Thank you.
Absolutely. And if those people are not easily accessible, that is oftentimes just a matter of sending them more invitations. In other words, sometimes a person who is like a celebrity, like for example Eckhart Tolle, well, he is hard to get a hold of. Well, so I just send him numerous emails and invite him to join me on the Facebook as a friend, and also have a colleague who knows him personally, so ask him to connect us. So in other words, there are different ways to connect with prominent experts in the field. And once you have connected with them, then there are opportunities for cooperating with them because you are doing them a favor. You are helping them get publicity. So they may be inclined to return you a favor, or they may feel like you have a substantial number of followers who are listening to your show. They would like to create a joint venture with you, or they would like to co-present a seminar with you. One of the best things that I figured out what to do with the guests on my show is to ask them how they became masters. What are the steps that you took to become a master? Are there any particular steps that you would recommend to the listeners? For example, are there any specific beliefs or attitudes that helped you become a master? Or are there any that you had to let go of because they were hindering your progress? Or if you had a chance to do it all over again, how would you do it so that you would become an expert or a master in your field? Does it make sense?
Yeah.
And when listeners listen to that type of personal accounts, then of course it's entertaining, it's sometimes very informative, and it's also showing that this expert is a real person. They may have gone through some personal drama, they may have experienced some personal setbacks, and they managed to overcome them somehow. And that is one of the most interesting things to bring up on the show, because it is one of the most interesting things for people to hear about. And of course, if you have some experience that you would like to share, well, you can definitely interweave that into the conversation so it becomes a dialogue rather than a monologue.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, our teleseminar is more of a monologue. So I will be happy to help you, Adela, to learn how to interview other people in a way that it would be more of a dialogue, where your expertise also comes through and you allow listeners to learn about you also, not only about the person who is offering the teleseminar or the interview. But this is something that I wanted to offer not only to you, Adela, but to the listeners of our teleseminar.
So what tips can you share? That was one of my questions, is any interviewing tips for our listeners? Anything that they can kind of tuck under their belt, things that are really helpful? You've shared a couple of them already.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely. Well, in addition to the ones that I just mentioned, there are several very interesting tips that I found work exceptionally well. One of them is to ask to share a story. In other words, stories are much more entertaining than theory. There were some interviews that I took on my radio talk show that talked about theory of Qigong or how energy healing works. Well, the practitioners of energy art may be really excited to tell how they think their art works, but most listeners will probably find it less entertaining, less than the story about how the person actually got involved, how they went through the training, what kind of experiences they had before they became a prominent expert or a master in their field, and how they became a master, and then what. I mean, when you become a master, it doesn't mean that you made it. You can call yourself master today. That doesn't make any difference you may not make a living off of calling yourself master, and nobody may even respect that. Sometimes it is interesting for people to hear stories about certain extraordinary events. So I ask the guests on my show to share any particular life-transforming or definitive moments in their personal history. And on the other hand, I also ask to share some of the snippets, so to speak, or some of the key points about their teachings. For example, if the person wrote a book, well, what are the five key points of your book? You know, some books actually have those points. Like, for example, if you ask Deepak Chopra, what are the key points of the book, The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success? Well, I'm sure he will come up with 7 points, just like the book implies. But some authors actually never thought about putting in the very succinct, almost bullet point, of what the book is about. So it is helpful to communicate beforehand with a guest, asking them, what do you think about this set of questions? I often send 12 questions or so to my guest and ask them, would you like to answer these questions, or would you like some other questions to be brought up? It's great to ask a person a question, what do you want to talk about during the interview? I'm sure that many of those people have been asked numerous questions throughout the years. What are the best questions that they received? And also, even more interesting, what are the questions that you think people should ask you about your work? Because those are often not asked. So that is an opportunity for the guest to clarify what it is that they are expert in or what they want to share with people, and then put it into such a succinct manner that an hour-long interview will be filled with a significant amount of valuable information. But it shouldn't be just information. It should be also entertaining. So how they present it is also crucial. If it's just boring recitation of bullet points, that's going to be a very boring radio talk show. People will just say, forget it. We don't want to listen to that again. So they will not be your base of listeners. In other words, you have to look for new people all the time. But if you are entertaining, then people will want to come back, if nothing else, for just entertainment value. But, of course, there has to be some meat in the show as well, so it has to be a combination, a healthy, or I would say happy medium between entertainment and education. As one of my speaking coaches, he calls it edutainers.
Edutainment.
Being an edutainer.
Yeah.
Being an educator and entertainer at the same time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes total sense. And, content and fun at the same time. Absolutely. We've got three questions. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. What other questions?
Dee Dubell would like to know, what is the one thing that would get you on a talk show and set you apart from others in your field? It's a little different than the content we've been covering, but I didn't know if you had any familiarity with getting on other talk shows and what would set you apart from others in your field.
Definitely. Well, I receive numerous emails and phone calls from people who want to be on my show. So nowadays, I don't even have to seek out guests. The guests are knocking my doors down. And my guest list is booked for the rest of the year and into the beginning of the year 2011 for each and every week of the rest of this year. So what happens is that in order to be invited as a guest, you need to be at least somewhat interesting. What do you have to offer that is of interest to the listeners of the talk show? It may be your personal history. It may be what you do for a living. It may be how you do it. There may be some connections between different fields that nobody else has explored yet. Maybe the way that you tie your business or your teachings with the current events that are already on the news. That may be very helpful. For example, one of my guests recently personally knows and used to practice golf with Tiger Woods. Well, it happened so that Tiger Woods was in deep trouble because of his family issues. And he was all over the news. Well, of course, the interview with a fellow who knows Tiger Woods and practiced golf with him appearing on my show was very well received by the listeners. That is just an example of how you can make yourself more desirable as a guest. And also, if you have something to offer that nobody else offers, well, that will certainly set you aside or apart, set you apart from the rest of potential guests. As I look through the list of people I want to interview, I definitely weigh who I resonate better with. So they may be also just a personal connection, either with the host of the talk show or the producer or a person who is in charge of booking the guests. So if there is any way to connect on a personal level, that will certainly put the foot in the door.
Right. Thank you. We've got two more. One from Tanya in Georgia. I've hosted a podcast for a few years now. The first, I began with a niche market, women's mysteries. Now I've broadened the field and host a show entitled Tanya and Friends, where I interview people from various walks of life. Is this too broad, or should I host two shows?
Well, it sounds like it is a really broad topic. If Tanya and Friends, if Tanya is a celebrity living in Georgia, I'm sure that there are some celebrities living in Georgia, then she may have her own show just named after her. For example, if Oprah started another talk show and just called it Oprah and Friends, I'm sure people would be flocking to listen to it or to watch that. If nobody knows about Tanya and nobody is interested in listening to her friends, it will be really difficult to attract people to that podcast series. So it would make sense to perhaps offer something specific. For example, how Tanya does, you know, what she does. For example, if she likes gardening and she is an expert in growing blue tulips. Okay, I'm just hallucinating right now. Okay. she likes growing blue tulips, and she knows better than anybody else in her neighborhood how to grow those. And she knows that some people may be interested in growing the blue tulips. Well, that can be a blue tulip show, and she can be the star host of the show, and she can invite other people she knows to also grow those blue tulips and would like to share their secrets.
Yes.
If there is the mystery, the women's mysteries, well, it sounds like women would probably be most likely listeners of the show, and it probably speaks to those women who are more into either feminist studies or perhaps more New Age spirituality type of thing, or, you know, the goddess spirituality. That is an excellent topic. I actually am surprised that she would deviate from that topic and go into Tanya and Friends, because The former sounds like an excellent topic if she has the steam to keep running that show.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just my opinion.
Okay.
I'm a man, and I don't know exactly what speaks to women. I just imagine that the women's mysteries would be something that would attract more attention.
Wonderful. Thank you, Nama. And I've got one last question from RB. She wants to know, how many listeners do you have for your show?
Well, we recently celebrated 50,000. So I think we have about 52,000 now.
Mm-hmm.
And these listeners are often repeating listeners. So in other words, many of them listen to each and every episode, or they subscribe to podcasts, so they receive them automatically on their computers or podcast or iPod. So that is it's considered a reasonable, quite a substantial number for a young show, a year and a half old.
Yeah, congratulations.
If your show,
yeah.
Thank you. If your show breaks the 100,000 mold, that is considered a very successful show. Now, if you have 100,000 people listening to your show, you can start selling commercials on your show, because there will be people who will pay for the access to that specific niche who you target. And if you have a smaller show, for example, if you have between a couple of thousand and 10,000, maybe 15,000, 20,000 listeners, well, you can certainly consider yourself a reasonably well-established show. How long does it take to get that many people? Some shows never get that. Others reach that number of listeners within several months. If you reach 10,000 people within several months, I will consider that a great success and will celebrate that with you. If you manage to advertise your show on the Internet, for example, through Google Ads or different e-zines, writing articles about your show or offering different bloggers an opportunity to report about your show, the bloggers who are in your niche or in your sphere of interest, that will probably boost your show relatively quickly. I have not really done very much advertising. I did not buy any Google ads. I just connected with people who are into Qigong in America and worldwide. Most of our listeners are from the United States, though.
Mm-hmm.
Probably because it's an English-speaking market, and a lot of people happen to know about me in America. So that is one of the reasons why I didn't feel like I needed to invest money in advertising. But if you feel that your show is going to produce the financial rewards, for example, you will be able to turn the show into a membership website and people will pay to listen to your show, then it is definitely a worthwhile investment to advertise it.
Mm-hmm.
With Web 2.0, oftentimes it is easier to just connect with bloggers and ask them to write about your show and send them a little gift. I call it an ethical bribe, and say, look, I really appreciate your blog, and I would love to be able to be featured on your blog with my radio talk show. And I will invite you as a guest on my show in exchange for writing about me. If the person's blog has 50,000 readers, well, then it would make sense to do that kind of exchange. And you can create all kinds of other wonderful joint ventures with people, for example, who are guests. If the guest is a prominent expert, well, it definitely would make sense to ask that person to send the email announcing that he is appearing on your show to his list. Many of the people who are my guests also have their own newsletters. Well, that is an excellent thing to mention in the newsletter, that the person is going to be appearing on the show. So that person's students or clients or friends will be happy to listen to that show. Well, that will definitely boost the number of people who are the listeners of your show.
Well, those are great tips. Thank you so much, Lama. And I know that you had a very generous offer for 10 folks in this community where you were going to offer them a session with you. Can you tell us how they can contact you about that?
Yes. I am crazy enough to come up with this offer of a free coaching session. I don't know if you have heard of it, but coaching has become a very popular and very well-established profession nowadays. 10 years ago, when I first started doing coaching, few people knew about it. But today, coaches are pretty well-established professionals, and it's considered one of the top fastest growing professions in the United States, as far as I know. Now, I am the founder of a profession I call Qigong coaching. So it's a combination of understanding how to be in the flow of energy. That also is done in the coaching format. So I bring the ancient energy arts together with the coaching methodology that can be done either on the phone or through Skype or through iChat. So it can be done either as an audio or even a video call. And what I would be willing to do is to offer 10 first folks who want to take me up on this offer a free coaching session. My normal rate is $200 an hour for coaching, and this is going to be a free gift to 10 first individuals who send me an email. You can send the email to tantrapa@me.com. Once again, tantrapa, T-A-N-T-R-A-P-A, @me.com, M-E.com. And the first 10 folks will actually receive a free coaching session. During that session, I will be happy to either assist the person with discovering the ways to be more in the flow on a regular basis in their life, or help them develop greater understanding of how to promote their own business or their own venture or a creative project through becoming a media personality, whether it would be a radio talk show or a different outlet. And, of course, if there are more people than that, then I will either put them on a waiting list or will offer a discounted a coaching session to those who are not among the first ones to register. So once again, the first 10 folks who send email requesting the free coaching session to tantrapa@me.com will receive it for free.
Thank you, Lama. That's really super generous. And thank you so much for being with us here at the Conscious Business Telesummit. And thank you, everyone, for joining us today, and those folks who will be listening in on the replay. Hope you get one of those sessions. And we'll see you all tomorrow again. Thank you, Lama, again. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Adela. Have a wonderful evening.
You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.